Welcome to For Manaless Women. I'm your host, Adele Onyango, and this is a space committed to nurturing a new generation of shame-free women. In this episode, I'm joined by digital creator, storyteller, podcaster, and my fellow Baldi, Sophie. You probably know her on the interwebs as The Oddity. Now, together we unpack what it really means to reclaim ownership of your life, from questioning everything you've been taught about womanhood, about building financial independence, about regulating your emotions, about embracing your authentic self and choosing courage over approval. This episode is for you who's tired of living according to everybody else's expectations. It's for you who's ready to stop asking for permission and start asking yourself one simple question: what do I want? So first and foremost, it has been quite the journey for Sophie to be on For Manaless Women. So first and foremost, Sophie, thank you.
It has been a lot. I am just so happy we finally did this. Like, if there was anything I didn't want to do in life, this was not one of it. Like, I feel like I was so determined to get this done that I feel like I can conquer anything in my life. Because every time the universe said, no, don't record, I said, it's a lie, universe. We'll fix something else. Thank you so much for having me. Oh my God.
It's such an honor. I think, like, on a personal level, I've interacted with your work online and just always felt first representation really matters. To see a Black African woman who's being unapologetically her on a global stage, it does wonders.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. That's so sweet. That's so kind. I love manaless woman. I'm like, I've always said this, I'm manaless. So I feel like this is so destined, for real. Thank you so much. That means a lot.
So let's start with the being manaless, honestly, which really I feel like for you is like consciously reclaiming ownership over yourself and your life. Do you remember the point you intentionally started doing that?
Oh, I honestly, I feel like there's been different versions of that specific thing. Does that make sense? Now when I think about it, I might say like, oh, I don't think I was even doing anything, because this version of me is so vastly different from the version that I thought I was maybe the beginning of this year, maybe even middle of last year. But I think the first version of Sophie that I ever said, who is Sophie? How does she want to be represented? Who does she want to become, essentially, started, I think, maybe in high school. Back in Nigeria, when I think I was a Muslim, I was raised Muslim, and we were supposed to be figuring out if we were supposed to be studying Islamic religious knowledge or Christian religious knowledge. And just like, it just was a thing where all the Muslim students would study the Muslim studies, and, you know, Christians would study Christian religious knowledge. And I remember sitting there and going, why? If I'm already learning about Islam at home, wouldn't it make sense, as someone who already has this knowledge, to learn about other religions? In that way, I'm well-rounded as an individual. And for everyone in my school, for my professor, or like my teacher at the time, for my mom, it was like, who are you? How dare you? You want to convert? You're a terrible child. Like, this is not what we do. We are supposed to study this. And I was like, we're supposed to. There is no supposed to here. So I think little by little, I think me having those kind of questions about what society just assumed was the status quo has influenced the person I am. So even like as little as me being, I think I was like 9-10 years old, asking these questions. And so over time, I think I've become that person who usually was like, why is this the norm? Does it fit what I want for myself? If it doesn't, how can I do what I want for myself?
And did you find, like, on that journey of questioning, so it started when you're 9, and I'm assuming it never stopped, did you find that you were leaning further and further away from what society defines as a good African woman?
I believe so. And I think that's why I enjoy having conversations like this, because when we see what society determines as a good African woman, it is from a patriarchal lens, right? It wasn't a woman who decided what a good woman was. I think if it was, the definition would be vastly different, I'm sure, from
Yeah.
what we have today. It wasn't. So for me, I think every time I questioned what I was supposed to do, why was I supposed to get married so young? Why was I supposed to only study this thing? Why was I supposed to not go play in this way? Why was I supposed to dress a certain way? It always became, oh, because either, the men don't like it, or, it's not as a good woman, it's not this, it's not that. And it was oftentimes from a limiting perspective. And that to me, I did not like. I don't think any human in the world should ever feel like they're limited in their experience of life simply because they're women. You know what I mean? I think as humans, we should have equal opportunity to enjoy life for what it is. But that's like, this is a dream, right? I can say all this on the podcast, but it's still a dream for, I have the privilege of saying this, even in a country like America, where in some way I still have a say in my life, but that's not the case for a lot of African women, back on the continent, even across the world, honestly, mostly Black women too.
Yeah, I honestly, it's always a bittersweet moment for me, like acknowledging that it's a privilege for me to not subscribe to what society wants me to do or to be, which is sad.
Exactly. And I think it hurts because when you're having these conversations too, I think it's easy. I don't know if you saw the conversation around Emma Greed recently, about her book where she was talking. She's, it's an incredible woman. She's powerful. She's worked with the Kardashians. She's married. She has kids. She's doing all these things. She's so successful. And every time people heard her talk, a lot of women just were pushing her back and saying, "Well, this is coming from a huge place of privilege. Like, what you've achieved, you couldn't achieve without, a white husband or community or access to whiteness or your accessibility to the skin color and this and that and your accent and your background." And for me, I'm like, yes, that's actually true. Like, there's so many facets of ourselves that give us certain privileges that help us move farther. But at the same time, we can't stop the fight. Like, I can't, I would never, I don't think, I never thought I would live in America and be the oddity. I never, not for, not in my wildest dreams. I mean, I was never dreaming of the life I'm living right now. I didn't even think it was possible. So for me, it was more so like, okay, this dream cannot be limited by what people think I should be doing, but what does Sophie want to do? And every time I asked Sophie that question, whatever answer she answered is what led me to where I am today.
Let's go to like your dream. And I really resonate with your posts. I think you share a lot now about how grateful you are for the life you're living and you're, but when did you move to America?
So I moved in 2014. The plan, my mom is a single mom, so it was me and my brother when my mom and my brother's 10 years, we're 10 years apart. And so for her, she could not, of course, afford for any of her kids to travel abroad at the time. So I went to university in Nigeria and I was studying law. So I was in law school for a year. And as the typical story goes, with I think there was a documentary about it on Netflix about sex for grades in Nigerian universities. A professor had approached me, said I was not going to pass my 100-level course in law if I did not start sleeping with him and be part of his harem at this point. I declined because I was, what, 15, 16. And I remember just crying and telling him that I'm so young. And at that point, I was still wearing the hijab. I was still, dressed pretty modestly. And I was still just doing everything I was supposed to be doing, even with the pushback I always gave my family about what I wanted to do. I mean, what I wanted to do was just be a lawyer at that point. I just wanted to be a lawyer. I remember I was sexually harassed, assaulted actually, by this professor. And that was my, I think, pushed to be like, I can't live this life. I can't. I remember talking to my family about it, and they just saying like, "Well, if you dress a certain way, you're always just calling attention to yourself. This is why I'm telling you that in this school, you just keep quiet. But no, you want to be Madame Clinical. You want to join modeling. You want to do all these things. If you're just quiet, they will have no notice to you." And I remember thinking, "Oh, so a quiet woman was not going to be assaulted, mind you. The women I knew who were all sleeping with this professor, because they had no choice, were quiet women. In fact, very few of the vocal ones were the ones that he targeted, if anything." So I remember just, I stole some money from my mom and snuck and applied for the IELTS and SATs because I was like, you know what? I've been watching Hannah Montana growing up, watching Miley Cyrus, doing all these things. Maybe I can live in America. If I can get a scholarship, I can move to America. And so I applied. I did really well on both exams. I got into a college in West Virginia. I didn't even think of, you know how you hear African students dreaming of like really great universities. I did not
Yeah.
dream of that. I did not make it. Like, I did not, how much was in the South when I need to survive? I'm thinking, I just need to get into a school. It's last minute. We need to get make something shake. So I went to some random university in Concord University in West Virginia, in the middle of nowhere, West Virginia, with people who did not even know what Africans were. And that's where I landed and came to America. And it's been great and blessed. And I'm just so I'm pleased and I'm happy I'm here.
Sophie, my goodness, like I wish we were in the same room. I would stand up and give you a hug just because it's
I
so
feel it.
inspiring. Like
Oh,
the
thank you.
intentionality around this is what I want. It's unfortunate that it's a traumatic experience that sparked that. And I need to move. I need to move. But like the intentionality you had around that. I hope if your mom listens to this, she doesn't hear this part, but like I'm even applauding you for stealing some of her money
Oh, no, she'll be all right.
to go and do your exams. But like when you land in America, you are alone. You are a Black African woman, young woman. What are some emotions that are brought up for you then? And are there any identity issues you have to navigate?
Oh, they were. Oh my goodness. I think first of all, coming in, Trevor Noah said it best in his stand-up. He was like something along the lines of there's a casual arrogance Nigerians have. And that for me was what it was. Like for me, I'm Nigerian, I'm a Yoruba girl, I'm coming here, and this university is going to, I'm going to succeed because I need to, my plan now is I've stolen the money, I've gotten to this country. Now what? I am, it's just me. I had an uncle who had his family to feed, so it's just me that you need to figure this out. So I'm like, okay, we need to excel and excel and excel. I remember my first class, one of my first classes actually. The passage in American colleges, the first week of classes, the professor passes like a paper. I don't know if that's changed now, but usually they pass around a paper and you fill out with your name, you do like maybe some fun facts, and then you fill out whether or not you're either Black, African American, African descent, or you know, Hispanic, non-Hispanic, all of that. So I remember seeing that paper. I filled out Derenke Ibrahim and I put other. For instead of putting Black slash African American, because I had a green passport, so I put other and I put African and in brackets Yoruba Nigerian.
Oh, wow.
And I remember submitting it, and the professor at the end of the class calls me to the side and he goes, "Hey, you Negroes are the same." And yeah, and then he says to take Black slash African American. So I'm looking like, oh, okay. Now, of course, I know the history because I'm learned. So I know the history of the word Negro. I know the history of the word nigga. Like, I know all these things. So I don't like it. I don't like the feeling. You know, I just don't necessarily like the word had any meaning in particular to me. But I knew, you know, when someone insults you and says a word, well, you know, that word was said with a devilish undertone. Like, it might have been like the sweetest word, like, oh my God, thank you. But you're like, that thank you seemed like going to slap my face when you said that thank you. So I need to have a problem with you. That was how I felt. I felt like, he wanted a reaction from me with this word. I'm not going to give it to him. So I remember going, no, I'm African. And this is me so confident about this. And then I, you know, put the paper down. He's like, no, da, 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 da. Starts raving and ranting. Now, this is America. So I don't know what to do. So I just say, okay, sir, I'm so sorry. Put my tick, and I went about my day. And I told my friends about it. I'm like, oh, you guys, are we Black or African American? And they're looking at me like, no. Well, they're like, yes. So, like in America, you know, we're Black. You're considered Black here, because the diaspora is. But I was like, but I'm not African American though, because I'm not American. Like, I, for me, being African American was like I was born and raised in America. I am not. And they were like, oh yeah, but Black by itself might seem that way. And I was like, oh. And the man even called me a nigga. Like, can you imagine that? Oh, the uproar. He did what? Let's go report him. They didn't do anything, my dear. And just the man was still on staff in class. That was 2014. No one really cared about all of that race. Shoot. Now they probably would be the same way, which is sad. I think maybe in 2020 it would have been different. But so yeah, that was my first intro into identity. And I feel like it helped me understand that I was Black first in America before anything else. And I was a Black woman at that. So that was also its own cross to bear.
That is so deep, and like you now have to start deconstructing because we don't have to. And
Exactly.
I have to say, like, we as Africans who are on the continent and living in the continent, and at most for those of us who can travel and then come back, we don't. I would never call myself black. Like, I would just be like, no,
Exactly.
I'm Kenyan. I'm Luo. So I get you. You talk a lot about ownership, and this is a conversation that we've had before, just like how women can own themselves. So you've owned your identity, but in the world that we live in, another aspect of ownership is financial, right? And so you're in America at that point in time. How do you start to work towards financial independence?
One of the cool things I will say, well, cool might be a stretch, but one of the interesting things about life in America is, in many ways, America is a pretty capitalist society. Like, you're born, woman, man, girl, like, everyone is born to hustle. Like, you can't survive in America if you're not trying to make money. And it's something that is instilled in you from a young age. Like, you have young girls being babysitters at 10, 13, 14, just to make money. They want to buy anything, and their parents wouldn't, give them their allowance or something. Like, that's typical American culture. The young boys are, hustling and buying, doing the same thing, whether this like working really hard, getting scholarships to go to universities. From a young age, that's what it is here. I think back home, well, let me speak about my upbringing in Lagos. A lot of the families that I was surrounded by, you rarely work until you're out of school, from my understanding, anyways. Like, especially the girls, oh, you're not going anywhere. You're not leaving your father's house. Or in my case, my mother's house. It's very much like, even my brother, I don't think, was allowed to have another job. Because the focus then is, if you're the mom and the dad, their sole job is to protect you, to be there for you, to provide for you. So most of the time, you see young kids not equipped or financially, anyways, to control their lives, because that's how their parents control them. And I don't mean this as a negative or a positive. I'm just stating a fact, right? It's the ownership essentially of their life is on who's financing that life. And for most young African Nigerian kids, that's their parents. So if you want to go to secondary school, your mom is paying, or your dad's paying your secondary school fees. If you want to do anything proficient, they come in to give it to you. If you have any extra sports, they give it to you. When you go to universities, most of the time, most people then maybe start doing some odd jobs here and there to just make extra money than what their mom or like families are giving them. But for the most part, again, they're dependent on their family to provide for them. And so that control, I even see that for a lot of kids, international African kids that come to America too. The parents are paying their school fees. So if they ever come here, for some reason they want to change their hair, and their parents say, if you cut that hair, I won't pay your school fees. You're not cutting your hair. Or if you get here, you realize you don't want to be a doctor anymore, because being medical biology is really hard in your first year in America. And you say, oh, mom, can I please change to engineering? Well, maybe not engineering, but let's say I want to change to architecture. I want to change to physical therapy. We're not paying that tuition for that, too. So you either stay at the doctor, or you're getting dropped out of school and coming back home. You're going to stay. Some kids will even lie, So I think that control is what a lot of African young kids, especially women, have had to deal with for so long, that when it is time to start pushing back, my first thing was always financial freedom for me. So even when I was in America starting out, I had an uncle who was nearby who, of course, would help when he could. But I knew my mom couldn't afford it. So when I was in college, I'm asking for scholarships. I'm asking for odd jobs. I'm braiding hair on the side to get some cash. I'm making meat pie and jello fries and learning how to fry chicken so I can get money here and there for allowance to start saving up, so my mom isn't having to pay for anything. And thankfully, after my first year in America, she wasn't paying for anything. And it was just, me hustling. And so if I start social media and I have a blog post that says whatever, and she doesn't like that, she's calling me. I'm like, well, I can listen to you, but the most you do now is to shout at me. There's no stress, there's no leverage. There we go. There's no leverage, which was helpful for me. in terms of doing what I wanted to do.
And has that financial independence become more important as you grew up as an African woman in terms of like freedom, in terms of being able to exit spaces that maybe are not comfortable for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for I how do I say this nicely? We live in a patriarchal society. We do. And for a lot of young girls, not all, but for a lot of young girls, financial freedom either comes from their families or from their partner. Meaning you're taught and raised to either get money from your parents or get money from a well-to-do husband. That power is already damaging for young women. So for me, financial freedom was so important because I was never one of those girls, and that's not knocking those girls because circumstances are so different, but I was never one of those women who thought my boyfriend should buy me XYZ or my man has to get me into this space. I didn't actually even conceptualize this idea that I have to depend on a man for something. Now, I will say that was largely in part to the fact that my mom was a single mom, and the variation of her own single motherness was the one of she was super duper independent. Like my mom was still the kind of person who was like, because I'm a single mom, I'm suffering, so I want you to find a man who will take care of you. She never gave me that. She was, I'm going to work and show you that you need to work 10 times as hard to get to where you want to go. Plus, she's also the first of like eight kids and 26 other siblings as well. So she's the first daughter. Right. So she's not defending. There's no, she's a matriarch, essentially. So I saw that. And that to me was like, okay, I saw how she withheld her own, she held on to her financial freedom for her own success. I'm going to do the same thing too. So even growing up now and being where I am, it's important when I'm in spaces to realize I have my own coin. If I'm going to Ghana for Death of December, no one is sponsoring my holiday. No one, like, I know I have my drive. Like, it's so funny because the people around me, especially when I'm in conversation with guys who are my friends, they see me so differently because of it. And they see me as one of their own, which in some way is also interesting, right? I'm thinking of Emma Creed again when I think about this because she talked about how in all the rooms she's in, there's not enough women in those rooms. She's oftentimes talking to men because there's a certain level you get to as a woman where it's mostly men that in that space because of the patriarchal society we live in, because of this financial freedom conversation we're having, because it's hard. Don't get me wrong, it's hard. It's hard to be not sexualized. It's hard to fight back. It's hard to push back. It's hard to be a woman in this world. But the fight is worth it because essentially, when you get to where you need to go, you see the difference.
100%. Like when you're talking, I'm just also reflecting in my life. And it's interesting, like when you're able to make those decisions for yourself, and I don't aspire to get men's respect, but it's interesting how you get that respect when you have financial independence. It's a very weird thing.
Exactly.
There's something else you talk about in ownership, and I'd never ever heard it before. And ever since you said it to me, I have been thinking about it because you said you also have to have emotional ownership as a woman, right? You have to own your emotions.
So I learned a lot that self-control was essentially, you know how like when you're growing up, let me say it this way. You know when you're growing up, when we talk about young boys and young girls, they teach men to have emotional self-control. Now, let me say this, they're not the best at it. It's terrible. Young boys, young men themselves, people talk about how men are very, very emotional, right? Especially when they're actually let go and they show you how catastrophic it can be. We see Trump right now. We see how he's behaving. Like a man can throw a tantrum worse than a woman can, for sure. But we oftentimes see women's emotion as, oh yeah, she's a woman, she's all over the place. Oh yeah, she's a woman, she's this. Oh yeah, she's emotional. And for me, I didn't understand that for a while because I had all these emotions too, and I had all these dreams too, and I had all these things that it was oftentimes hard to get past my hormones, my emotions, my feelings to get to the dreams that I wanted to get to. So I worked very, very, I'm telling you, very hard, going through therapy, journaling, meditation, working out, running. I have spent, I think I spend maybe 6 to 6 hours a day intentionally investing in emotional regulation for myself. And it's a game changer for how I want to live. It's First of all, therapy just taught me that there's so much trauma that I'm having to unpack, right? Sexual trauma from the past, not having the dazzle daddy issues, some would say, avoidance issues, all these things that I know would hinder me. I know I used to struggle a lot with, birth control and hormones, and I used to feel so overwhelmed by those. I used to spend, the follicular phase and the luteal phase and all these things. You know what I mean? Like, it's so much. It's, as a woman, oh, yo, we go through so much. We go through, like, we can't have a conversation about financial freedom. We can't have a conversation about having dreams. We're not talking about how the cost of being a woman in society is hard. It's hard. It's even harder. The emotional labor is harder than anyone else, really. Like, you're thinking also of, like, maybe you want to be a mother, or you're going this way and that. It's so much. But those, the time that you take to regulate your emotions, to find yourself, to know who you are and why you are who you are, is what is the difference between you and that, like, what is the thing that will close the distance between you and the dream you want to get to? That's always been what I've thought.
And I love the intentionality because I always say you have to invest in meeting your highest or your best self. It's not going to come
Exactly.
automatically. And a lot of that work is emotional stuff. It's healing. It's giving yourself grace. Honestly, I'm like in the tail end of my luteal phase. Like right now, I'm just like, just shed the blood. I'm ready.
Just
Please,
go.
please. I'm tired of this luteal phase, you know? And just understanding your body. So I hear you. Would you say you're working towards a point where there's emotional freedom, like such a high level of owning your emotions that there's freedom that comes with it?
Yes, I believe so. I think there's, because freedom is, subjective anyways too, right? Like, what is freedom in this context, and how can I conceptualize that? But I would say I'm a better woman for me because of my emotional state. I'll give you an example. So I today was really was going to be a hectic day. I just started acting classes. I have to study this script. I had this interview that I must not miss. I was making, like, nothing would make me miss this interview today. I had a few posts I had to get up, and I had a bunch of emails I had to do. I'm also, like, reviewing some podcast clips. So, and all of this was supposed to happen between 10, like 8 a.m. today, and when my acting class started at 2 p.m. Because at 2 p.m., for 4 hours, I was locked into class, and then I have Pilates later tonight. All these things are planned, right? So I slept for 4 hours, and sleep is, of course, very important. Slept for 4 hours. Already, my Oura Ring is telling me it's going to be a rough day. And I woke up, and a version of me then would have sat down and gone, I just want to sleep in. I'm sad. And I would have spent, like, an extra 2 hours, whether that's doom scrolling, sitting in bed, wallowing, doing whatever. And that little brain, that little voice in my head goes, okay, what would my future self do? And my head is like, okay, she'll get up. So I got up. So, okay, that's step one. I said, okay, I want to meditate. That's one of my habits. I search for anxiety help, breath work. So I spent 5 minutes, and I was like, I can't do 10 minutes today. I don't have time for that. I just don't feel like doing 10 minutes. I gave myself 5 minutes. I did breath work for 5 minutes. I journaled for 30 minutes. Morning pages, 3 pages every day of just conscious thought, did that. And I never used to be this personal. I'm telling you, this thing I'm saying out loud, if anyone is listening to this, you're like, oh, here they go, journaling or meditation. I'm telling you, we're saying it because it actually is important. Like, I even some morning page, if you read my journal, you'd be like, hey, this girl has needs help, or she needs help. But it, somewhat, so this head thing in our head, our minds, our emotions, it has to go somewhere. And it doesn't have to go to a friend or a partner. It has to just go somewhere. Write it down. If you can't write it down, voice record it. Like, that one's dangerous, shout out, because you never know who can listen to it. But I wrote it down, And I was like, okay, I still feel heavy. I said, okay, let's go for a walk. So I walked for 30 minutes and I was breathing as I was walking and I just let go. And I feel infinitely better. I came back, did a 30-minute work sprint, 25-minute on my phone timer, got everything I thought was going to take me 2 hours to do, got it done in 10 minutes, which is crazy. And then I took a nap because I knew I needed more sleep. I woke up and I spoke to you. You would have never been able to tell that I was tired by the time I came on this call. I am full of energy. I'm excited. I've taken my vitamins. I've drank water. I've eaten lunch. I'm about to post on Snapchat. That's what I mean by regulating my emotions. Because sometimes we often think our emotions are facts when they're simply feelings. And sometimes you can really change how you feel. Like, you can change how you feel. And this might sound so privileged, but this is from someone who has worked really hard. You can change how it feels. You will have to fake it for the first couple of minutes. But I'm telling you, you can go from being so exhausted, woman, into at least a smirk. Even if it's not a smirk, a little smile, a little bounce in your step. You can absolutely do that.
Like I'm listening to you and I even have my eyes closed because like you are speaking such truth and I just want to pile on the journaling. I think I listened to this doctor speaking on a podcast and he was talking about the things that they so help people cope during the pandemic and he said the number one thing was journaling. He was like, journaling showed the most impact in helping people handle their mental during the lockdown, all of the deaths, all of people losing work, all of those things. And I think we really underestimate what journaling can do.
Exactly. I remember as a kid, I used to enjoy writing, and now with like social media, our thoughts are often the ones that we post because we're inviting opinions on those thoughts, right? So when you post something, you're looking for feedback. With journaling, there is no feedback. Like, you're simply writing to write. And I think that's something that we've lost as a society. Like, there's an importance of like all the stories from the past, we only know about them because we're reading people's journals and diaries. Because it's important to read someone's mind to see what they're dealing with, to see what they're able to go through. I think that to me is what's helped me at least be a lot more intentional about myself.
I want to go into something we have in common, which is our bald
Ooh.
heads.
Yes, my bold sister.
It is so wonderful. Let me tell you, I always say, and I shave my own head, and I feel like to me, it's always a reminder that you can be reborn every 2 days, every hour. Like it's never who you are today. So just as you're talking about like being your best self, you can start being your best self this minute or the minute after that. And so shaving is always kind of like a rebirth for me and I love it so much. But like, what was your inspiration to shave off your hair?
Someone said this the other day. I think she was who posted about this, maybe not, but she said bald by choice or bald by nature. And it's something that stuck with me because I love that analogy. But I'm bald by choice, and when I've never thought of shaving my head. First of all, like, it was never a thing. I didn't go to a university, like a school in Nigeria, anywhere that forced women to shave their heads, which is a different conversation we could have. But I didn't go to where the any of those schools. So I've always just had hair, and my hair is, regular, regular. I love my 4C hair. I used to do Afro puffs, all of it. But I definitely got a lot of migraines, but I also did a lot of like crochet hair, braids, all of it. But I remember one of the biggest reasons, because I had a few, but one of the biggest ones, it was again this idea of what society wanted from me. And my uncle at the time, who I was like staying with in America when I came here in between school, I'll go to his house, see his family, all those things. He hated the fact that I didn't cover my hair as a Muslim. So for him, he was like, as a Muslim girl, you're supposed to cover your hair. It's not modest. It's not this. So I shaved was like, first of all, I shaved was like, well, if I didn't have hair, would this be considered, immodest? Because now I'm not really covering anything because, I don't have hair to cover. He was so upset. Oh my God. He thought this devilish child. I was like, well, it's a question. I'm just asking you a question, But for that was my thinking. And then I remember when I first cut it, this was like January 8th, I think, 2018. I sent photos and selfies to my friends, and everyone is like, "Oh my God, you have such a big forehead. You're so ugly. Why would you do this? This is unacceptable." No, it was horrible. Just terrible all around. And I was just like, "Oh my God, you like, do I, am I that, do I look that bad? What is going on here?" So I remember thinking, okay, this can be good. And it just was affecting my self-esteem so much. And I just said, you know what? No one would ever make me feel bad about something that I thoroughly think I look beautiful. So I started cutting it as a like a refusal to be to accept nonsense that I'm ugly. I swear. In my head, I'm like, no one's gonna make me, a woman, feel like I'm not. And then my mom, of course, was also like, "I gave birth to a girl, not a boy. What have you done? Give me, like, go grow your hair back." I said, woman? Oh, not the divorce. I'm not growing this hair back." And it's been what, 2018, almost 10 years of this fight of this is who I am and I enjoy it and I love it. I don't think I can grow it back. I just don't enjoy it anymore. I can't even imagine myself with hair anymore.
I feel you on that because when I shaved my head off, or my hair off rather, I was meant to do it only for 1 year, which is last year. And I love how I look. I love it so much. I'm just like, why should I
It is
not do
so
it? Why
good.
should it be an experiment? Like, it just who is who I am. And I wonder, does your rocking your bald head, does it feel spiritual or political at all for you?
Oh, absolutely political in every single way. This is not normal, right? Like you hear a lot about, being a woman, your hair is your weapon, your hair is your crown, your hair is your goal. And it is, right? There's this conversation that was happening online where this creator was talking about women, with 4C hair, oftentimes compare our hair to, white hair, and how like we really need to love our hair more. And I was like, for us girls that cut the hair, what is our lesson here? Like, why did we do that? And I had to think to myself, and I said, did I actually not like my hair? Because I was like, oh, actually no, I just simply I love the beauty of my features. I walk into a room and my eyes are on display, my nose is on display, my head is on display, my skin is on display, my scalp is on display. And I feel so sexy, so confident, so feminine, so sultry, so determined, so confident. And I never used to hide behind my hair for sure, but for someone who is confident in herself, this feels like the natural thing for me. This feels like so natural to me. And I think that's what I want a lot of women to think about when it comes to their hair is what's natural to you? Like what makes you feel your most authentic bare self? Like on this call before we started out, I know we don't have video, but we're both barefaced, right? You have no makeup on.
Yeah, I have no makeup on.
Yeah, like we're both barefaced and we look absolutely breathtaking. We're bald, barefaced, living our best lives, being intelligent women, killing it. And it feels like there's no mask. Now, I'm not saying those who are, have all these things are wearing a mask, but there's a beauty in just being who you are and existing. I'm not putting on a dance for anyone. I'm not existing for anyone with myself right now, and I'm thoroughly happy with myself.
Yeah, and I love that when you're saying you love how you look, you added the word feminine because a lot of times when people interact with us baldies, it's like, oh, okay, you're now masculine, and it's like, oh, how? You deduced that
Girl, how?
from my
Please.
head.
Every time I'm like, huh? I'm like, I'm just a girl, or just a girl. Especially if you're bald and you're rich and you're smart and you're successful. Oh, I can't marry a man. So you need to. Who are you? First of all, I don't want you, anyways. But who are you to even think that? Like, who are you to determine that masculinity is all these things that are linked to success because femininity isn't? Like, in what world is being a woman and being a successful woman masculine? I am a woman, so inherently that has to be feminine, right? Ridiculous.
And even when you tell women to define what feels right for them, then that means that I can add my definition to what femininity is, however it looks
Exactly.
like, right?
Exactly.
Let's talk about desirability a bit, because I was writing about this on my socials recently about how we are socialized as women to be chosen. So even the way we look has got to give us the highest chance of being chosen. So if we hear men don't like women who put on makeup, we're all running to not wear makeup. Or they like women with hair like this, we're all running there, right? Because of socialization and the definition of desirability in a patriarchal system is what do men want, or what we think men want. How do you unpack desirability for yourself instead of taking what society is defining it as?
Oh, that's a good question. I feel like for me, in many ways, I have never truly considered myself in regards to or in terms of wanting to be wanted by someone else or like society in general. And I think that's very different. Not a lot of people think this way. I'm very aware of that. And again, maybe I go back to that. My mom, I love that woman so much, but my mom was such a, she is such a force. She's such a powerful woman, and she simply existed as herself. Now, I'm pretty sure that woman wanted to be desired in several different ways, whether that was through work, for partnership, all that stuff. But I never saw that. Instead, I just saw someone who was so in, so sure and so intentional about wanting the best for herself and her kids. I think that's where my mentality around desirability came from. Everything I do is to be the best version of myself for me. And because of that, I end up being desired by other people inherently. Like, if I'm great at being me, people are going to notice that. And it does, nothing, none of their opinions matter because I'm so locked in on me that it tends to happen. And I like to say that to a lot of young girls when, because you're growing up, you're seeing things are like they're hip and happening and you feel like you're different, but that different is what makes you special. That difference is what makes you unique. That difference is what makes you you. And for a lot, I always notice that the girls who are themselves the most are the ones who are truly attractive. Like you see it, you can tell a woman who loves herself is like super attractive because she clearly doesn't give a fudge about anything. She's just doing her.
I hear you. I hear you. And it's almost like the glow is from inside. The beauty, it's not superficial.
Exactly. It's never superficial because it never is. Like, and also, beauty fades. Like, superficial beauty fades. In men, like, what was I talking about the other day? Let's talk about like body image, for example. Body image changes, or makeup changes. 3 years ago,
Trends.
blush, like try blush was something that you only lightly you even you didn't even try to touch that palette. You press it lightly like a feather and touched it boom, on your face and you ran away. If you press blush on your face more than like a feather, oh my days, you were considered a clown. Now, blush is everywhere. Oh, there's drama on transitional blush, transitional this, 30 blushes, 5 blushes, 3 blushes, 7 blushes. There's so many blushes that you can get. But before, blush was just one blush. So for me, it's like we see trends change. So in what world would it make sense for me to try to follow society when society is oftentimes always changing by whoever is making this decision? So Sophie is always going to be Sophie. The Sophie you knew in 2000 is Sophie that you know in 2026. But she's definitely, absolutely going to be the same Sophie, no, not the same Sophie inside. Meaning, I would constantly, I'm like, I never used to journal. I never used to go on walks. I never used to run. I never used to work out as much. I never used to read books. I never used to be intentional about friendships. I didn't know my emotional attachment styles. I didn't know all these things about myself. I'm learning, I'm growing. That to me is attractive. That to me is never going to change. Because if whatever, for whatever reason, anything changes in life, I have the resources, whether that's for my mental health, for my spiritual health, I have the resources to keep my sanity. Because everything else can go, but as long as I internally am okay, that's all that matters.
Yeah. And you can't, society will always shift the goalposts. So if you're trying to keep them
Always.
happy, you're in for a long
My
ride.
dear. Always. Like, it'll show you shade a Pro Max.
Yeah. And
Like, society will tell you so much noise, and you're looking like, it's in the sick. What's going on here? So you just have to keep going, keep your sanity.
on this journey that you're on, where you are reclaiming ownership of all the parts of Sophie and where she wants to go and the best version of her that she wants to be, are there any moments where it feels lonely?
That's a good question. Honestly, I'm not gonna lie to you. That is the one thing I struggle with. And this is actually less to do with, and this may be super vulnerable and transparent here. It's less to do with my goals, like financial goals or like life goals or dreams, and more to do with my upbringing, right? So I was telling my best friend the other day, I was just like, I sometimes struggle with feeling alone because on this journey that I'm on, I don't have a partner. I don't have my own person. And I live in America by my flipping self. Like, I don't have it. Like, my friends have become fam my friends are my sisters. I wake up every day and they check. My friend just actually checked up on me before the call came on. She's become my sister. My mom is in Nigeria right now. My brother is in Canada with his own family, and he has his own kids and he has his wife. So I sometimes struggle with that idea of loneliness, and that's where community is so important because you can go, what is the adage? You can go fast or you can go far. And there was a point in my life where I was going really, really, really fast, and I burnt out because I was lonely. I was tired. I remember someone made a comment, visiting my apartment, my penthouse apartment in New York, and said, "Oh, just Sophie and her mansion in the star in the sky." And I said, "Oh, I don't like that. Sophie and her mansion in the sky. I don't like that. I don't know why I didn't like it. I didn't like it." And I just realized it was because if I knew how isolating it was where I was. Like, I was so proud of how far I'd come, but I also realized I was missing a few things. And so over the past year, I've been pouring into community. Like, my friend was just telling me, because I'm a nomad now, right? She was telling me, "Am I not tired? Like, don't I want my own space?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm craving that now." But I think I needed the past couple of months to visit friends, to meet their families. I had a friend who has a son that I hadn't seen in so long because it's always a brand trip. It's always some work thing. It's always this. Now I can, hang out with them, see them, be intentional about building this community that's outside of my work life. So I still struggle with loneliness, I'm not going to lie, but I'm very intentional now about that part of my life. I'm never alone for sure. Like with social media, you're never alone. But I'm making sure the people that are in my life are very intentional about me as much as I am intentional about them.
Yeah, I love hearing that because even for me, from last year to this year, I said I'm gonna start pouring into my female friends. I think we're socialized to know how to navigate romantic relationships and how to be healthy partners in that sense. But with friendship, I think only now are we beginning to have those conversations. And we used to take our friends for granted,
Exactly.
to be
You
honest.
did. I did.
Yeah. And so to hear you pouring back, because those are the people that give you emotional rest, like the places where you don't have to perform. You can just be you.
Exactly. And it's so important too.
So as we wind up, I also want to recognize that you are a podcaster as well. I love the name of your
I
podcast. Am
am. Am
I
I too
too loud?
loud? You're like, yeah, yes, you are, Soph. Yes, you are.
So we want to make sure, to you who's listening to this episode in the show notes, there's links for you to connect with Sophie, yes, but also to give her podcast a listen or a watch. So make sure you check that out for sure. But Sophie, maybe you can tell us a bit about Am I Too Loud?
Of course. So, Am I Too Loud is my podcast with Sophie, aka the mother freaking oddity, and it's I think it's a It's a real space. It's a real space for me to share my unfiltered thoughts about pop culture commentary, life lessons, stories about life, advice, if anything, and just interview some incredible people as well who are pioneers, who are the loudest in their field, the first in their field as well. And I've had her, I think we're about 61 episodes in, and she's just my baby. I've always wanted a safe space on the internet for myself, not for everybody else, because I would say what I want to say, but I've always wanted a safe space on the internet for myself. And it kind of was or is my little space to sort of like do that. But yeah, that's a nice too loud. She goes live every Wednesday at 12 EST, and you can expect anything from conversations on honest conversations about money to interviews with some stars. Ideally, in the future, I'm starting with just me yapping to the camera, and as I continue to go on, I'm going to start interviewing a lot more people. But yeah, that's Am I Too Loud?
Oh, I love that. I like that you've mentioned the money one because I can't remember who your guest was. Seemed to be a friend of yours, and you were having a very honest conversation on money.
Exactly.
So we're gonna make sure the links are in the show notes. And so,
Yes, please.
Sophie, to the woman who's listening, the manless or almost manless woman who's listening, what's your manless message for her?
Oh, let me see. I say, be bold. Be bold. I want more women to be loud, be bold, be proud, be courageous. Nothing good has ever happened to a quiet woman. All she's done is suffer in silence. Nothing fun has ever happened to a quiet woman. A woman who is bold, who is sure of herself and the things she wants, is a woman who's chasing after success. And that's simply what it is. And I don't even mean be bold in terms of like noise or in terms of like loud, right? I mean be bold in terms of what you want for yourself. If you want a career in law, be bold and chase after it. If you don't want to live in your parents' house anymore, be bold and chase after that. You can do that by working quietly, taking jobs, doing something online, marketing. There's so many ways. If you want to become an actor, you can do that. There's no excuse to not do what you want to do in this day and age. Like I tell people this because we see stories of people going from grass to grace. They're not one of one. You can do it too. Your circumstance is doing nothing for you. You are going to move past it. And it might sound easy to say because it feels like, oh, I can't change anything. But there was a time where I thought I was going to be deported from America because my mom didn't have tuition for me. And I just said, you know what, be bold. And I went to go and beg my school's administration, see what they could do. And I got on a scholarship. There were probably 20 plus, maybe even hundreds of students who were in the same position I was in, but were never bold to ask. And they ended up having to be deported or having to go home. There were times where I wanted a brand deal and I was too scared to send that price. And I said, you know what, let's send it. What would they do? The highest they would say is no. And they even thought that with probably a bigger price. There were times where I was scared to move apartments, move cities, say no, say yes. There's so many times, but I just always said to myself, the most that will happen is no. That's the worst that could happen in this world. Even that person you like or you have a crush on, the worst they could do is say, oh no, thank you. And that's it. That's it. That's all. You can't dial. So be bold for sure.
What an incredible conversation. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. From owning your identity, your finances, your emotions, to redefining beauty, success, and desirability on your own terms. I hope this episode reminds you that the most powerful life you'll ever build is the one that feels true to you, to be honest. And if you'd love to connect with Sophie, which you really must, and you must also check out her podcast, not only because she's awesome and her platform is awesome, but here we're building a community of awakened African women. So we need to plug into each other and uplift each other's projects. You get me? So if you want to connect with Sophie and check out her podcast, Am I Too Loud? You will find all the links waiting for you in the show notes. And if this conversation moved you, maybe challenged you, or it reminded you of a woman who's learning to choose herself, share this episode with all the manless or almost manless women in your life.